Whoa, boss, how did that happen?
Mind your business.
I mean, how did a forklift make a shish kebab out of our company truck?
I said, mind your business, Billy. It's why we have auto owners. We work with an independent agent to customize our policies. So when the unexpected happens, we know we're covered. Because unlike you, minding our business is their business.
Oh, that's simple human sense.
Ask your independent agent if auto owners make sense for you.
You didn't do this, did you, boss?
Mind your business, Billy.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
T-Mobile is more than the best network in the game. They're now the best network in America, according to the experts at Ookla Speed Test. So MLB fans are connected from home to home plate. With the most advanced 5G, the most towers, and a signal that goes farther than ever, you can keep up with your teams on the road, overseas, and even off the grid. For baseball fans, it's better over here.
Based on analysis by Ookla Speed Test Intelligence data, 1H2025 compatible device and plan required for T-Satellite. See details at T-Mobile.com.
To remind you that 60% of sales on Amazon come from independent sellers, here's John from Devil Dog Pet Company.
We run our family business from Sterling Heights, Michigan, but we can reach customers all over the country thanks to Amazon. Good boy.
Shop small business on Amazon.
Let's go to the fan hotline. We welcome in Zach Jackson. I don't know if he likes Rush, but I know he likes football. I don't know if he likes Browns football right now. Zach joins us right now this morning. Hello, Zach.
This week, you're blaming Tyson Campbell. Next year, you'll be blaming Matt Campbell.
I'm not. Why do we even bother? Why do I even bother? They can see my face now, so I'm not going to do anything.
Did I hear in the last segment you said my dad doesn't listen to the show?
No, he doesn't.
Yeah, he listens to Rizzo. You're right.
Come on, Zach, come on. What's your problem? What did I do? What did I do to you? This is like how Pony feels when I just beat him so soundly in every argument, and this isn't even fair.
They had me on the morning show in Pittsburgh last week, and I was like debating, like, am I going to pick a fight with Pony? And I didn't. We just talked ball. It was fine.
Well, one day you called him an absolute dip bleep on the internet.
That was the greatest scouting report made by a Northeast Ohioan in a long time. I mean, it was 100% spot on.
I wasn't blaming Tyson Campbell. By the way, I'm glad you brought that up. Thank you for listening to our show. And tell your dad that he's got to get with the times here. Anyway, you heard that clip. I had two football guys. One texted me that 10 was worse than 12 on the field. The other one said that 12 was way worse than 10. I want to know, you've been around it. You've been around the movers and the shakers. What do you think? Which is worse?
Yeah, I think you get caught every time in the NFL with 12, right? Like back in Manchester youth football, we just used to play with 12 until we got caught.
That's why we've been losing. I've been caught their players. Damn it.
Yeah. But I think in the NFL, you get caught every time. And it happens. I was not familiar with that play. Like, I do like to watch the substitution patterns and things, or, you know, especially early in the game to kind of get a feel for how they're matching and, you know, how they're trying to do that. But I was not aware on that play. I mean, I remember the play, you know, because of the result. But, like, the story of that game was the Steelers knowing that two-yard plays were fine and that four-yard plays were better than fine, because they just knew that they only needed to get to a certain number, and they knew the only way they could lose was to melt down, right? And they obviously don't want to get their old quarterback hit. It's the worst scheduling spot in history. You can chalk it to that, but I thought the Browns defense played like a group that was in an awful scheduling spot and saw a starting cornerback get traded at 11 o'clock on Wednesday night.
Yeah, I agree. Totally agree. Go ahead.
All right. Zach, obviously, you know, you don't only lose to Pittsburgh, but you have their head coach, you know, talk about very publicly, you know, what your GM did. I mean, this is a rivalry. These two teams obviously all know each other, involved very well. How surprised were you to hear Tomlin not just mention the GM publicly, throw the name out there?
Yeah, so the way he chose to answer that question was certainly interesting, right? He knew the question was coming. He wanted the question to come, which I heard that, and I knew that already before I heard it on Around the AFC North this morning. But I thought it was very interesting how he chose to answer that. So it is a rivalry. He did feel personally attacked by giving the Bengals a lifeline, regardless of what people here think or how that turns out. So it still was interesting how he chose to do that. And look, that's a situation that they're in here. And I think in the past, you know, this organization has worried about what people say. And I think in good organizations, they don't care what Pat McAfee says or what another coach says or what people say. But I mean, to me, guys, it's really not about the quotes or the numbers as bad as they are. Like, how has this looked? And it has looked so bad for this offense. Like, it just looks so bad. And so I don't think that the coach is going to get fired next week. But if they lose this game and it looks like that again, then it's, you know, the season's already over. And frankly, they've been acting accordingly for a long time on that. But I think it's a fair discussion. When I got in the car this morning, the first thing I heard Ken say is when Kevin Stefanski gets fired. Right. And like when you're having those discussions, whether it's May or October, it gets real. And it looked so bad, that offense the other day, in addition to the other things. Well, it's just like, what is going on here?
In defense of my statement, I mean, I could say that if he won a Super Bowl over the last 10 years. I mean, that's
no doubt.
I get
no
what
doubt.
You're saying, because now I want to ask you. And probably this is a question for next week if they lose to the Dolphins. But, okay, I think a lot of people who are Browns fans probably think they're going to lose that game too. So let's ask this question here. If they fire him, I go, well, what does it truly accomplish other than punitive? What does it truly accomplish? Because I still don't think that this is going to go in the right direction. And you heard that explanation, but for people who are just jumping in, I said, I don't think the rest of the season is going to go very well. And they still got tearing down to do next year. So I don't think 2026 is going to go too particularly well. But if you left Kevin in charge, now you got the sour taste going into next year. So I don't see a scenario where this actually gets saved for him. But that doesn't mean I just fire him now because I'm mad at the Browns. Maybe, I don't want to fire anybody because I'm mad. That's not a reason you fire people.
Yeah, I think there's two avenues there. One, Ken, when you look at the cap and you look at 14 rookies on this roster, like there's a pretty good chance that they could be worse next year, like just in terms of the competitiveness from how they build, because all the offensive linemen are probably leaving, right? And they're already bad. So, but the other thing is, you're right, that I don't know what that fix is. But you are playing for the future, and you have to look at dynamics with so much of the season left. And it would be in the body language of the leaders. It would be in just the disgust of the uncompetitiveness of the product. I think they'll win this week. I don't think it'll happen. But that's what you have to ask. What does it really solve? Well, you know, I think you have to take a deeper dive into the human part of it here and what's really going on. So, look, there is so much season left. And internally, they need to obviously fix it and put out a more prepared, visually better, obviously more competitive product this week. But then, like, what can you salvage out of this season? And what can you do differently? There's a lot of teams in crisis that are way better than the Browns right now. There's a lot of teams that have worries right now that are way better than the Browns. Do the Browns have more? Sure. The Browns have chosen this offensive line. It is the biggest problem. And when you look at the receiving core and you look at the quarterback play, to think that those things aren't the biggest problem, I mean, it just feels completely broken.
Well, Zach, that's part of the issue, too. And Lima, I don't mean to take away a talking point from you, but Lima got exasperated last week. He goes, Ken, what the hell is their plan? Zach Zinder isn't even eligible to play, basically, active to play.
Right.
And the guy they took to replace their failed first-round pick, he keeps getting hurt. So you can't put that guy back out there. It's like, man, this is an offensive line that needs a complete retooling. And the only thought I have that's any sort of positive thought whatsoever is that, yeah, they'll probably trade away Ethan Posick here over the next few weeks, and then they'll put Luke Whipler out there, and he seems to have done a pretty decent enough job as a center. Okay, that's one. What am I going to do with the other positions?
Yeah, no, it's hard. It's hard. So, this is why it was hard for me to do my podcast, right? This is why it's hard to write a follow-up article after these games, either the hour after or the day after. Like, what we've seen is just a product that's going nowhere. And so, yeah, let's look at the other side, Ken, right? Those guys in Miami have been there a number of years, and mm-hmm. they're going to get fired, the GM and the coach, right? Well, why are they going to get fired? because the quarterback's not good enough, because the drafting hasn't been good enough, because they don't win. So, like, what else is there? There's no gray area here. Like, if they choose to stick with this regime, then either there's a huge turnaround coming or there's something that we don't know and we'll never know. Because the product we see every single week is subpar. The most expensive roster in the history of the NFL last year went 3-14. This team is worse. And next year, there's no indication of being any better.
All right, so obviously, Zach, then the next question is, what happens to quarterback the rest of the year? You know, how many weeks is Dylan Gabriel going to be given, and then at what point do you go to Shador? And then obviously there's another guy in the roster nobody likes, especially Ken, likes to talk about.
Yeah, I mean, you'd like to land that A dot right on like exactly a 5.0 or something like that, right? No, I think Dylan Gabriel is going to play for the foreseeable future as long as he's healthy. I don't think there's any intention to play Shador until a certain point. And I know that there's no chance that Watson is healthy enough until a certain point. So mid to late November is the earliest that he will be cleared to return to practice. And even then, I think there's almost no intention and almost no chance that he gets to the field. But we're still at least a month away from that part coming. So, yeah, it's a great question. And obviously, when you made the trade of Joe Flacco, you moved everybody up. Specifically, you went with the two rookies. And we were all surprised that they didn't promote Bailey Zappe. But yeah, I think we will see Shador. I've always thought that, but I didn't ever think it would be before December. And so now the circumstances might change that, but unless something else happens, injury or complete, like how much lower can this offense go? Right. And like, we've already seen the ceiling on Dylan Gabriel. It's not his fault. He has no chance out there based on who's out there, but he also has no chance to be a starting quarterback in the NFL. That even Ken admitted that after seeing two drives. I was proud of you, Ken.
Thank you.
So like, where do you go? Like, Shador plays, but is it the Niners game? Is it the Titans game? You know, I don't know that right now because it's October 15th and we're supposed to be talking about the Dolphins game and no one is because it's that bad.
Wait, Zach, are you telling me that the film crew documenting Deshaun Watson's revenge tour, they're going to have to wait or they're going to be given another 2 months full of video opportunities before this documentary is going to be ready to go?
Well, there'll be t-shirts like Baker had before the game in Carolina. I mean, yeah. Deshaun, the earliest he's going to be cleared is mid to late November. That's what I can tell you. And where it goes from there, I don't know. From what I've gathered, and this is correct, there's no motivation by the Browns to get him on the field. But how it actually goes, there's a lot of moving parts.
Next Penn State head coach will be.
Why did you ask him that question? He's not supposed to answer that. We're talking about the Browns. What else is left?
There's
plenty left.
I really enjoyed Zach's coverage of football.
If they were to let go, shut up. I know what you're doing, and it ain't going to happen. He already had one reference today. There's not going to be another one. All right, Zach, if they were to move on from Kevin, who would be the interim?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think
you're damn right it is.
I think Schwartz would get, and this is all speculation, and this is the part I hate when they're so bad. Mm-hmm. Like everything we do in coverage, just talk. You guys talk about it 4 hours a day. What do you do? You speculate, right? I write four articles a week and do four podcasts a week. What do? You speculate. I believe he would be given the first shot, and I think if he thought that he would have proper authority, he would take it. I think if he didn't, he would do that. But that's how I feel. That's not anything I know. That's just kind of how I feel. And I think there's only a small possibility that you're exploring that reality 5 days from now.
Okay, fine. Now ask him the Penn State question you want to ask him.
Well, I mean, based on last week at Dick Stadium, is Mark Kearney going to be coaching Kent State or Penn State next year?
Hey.
It was very good.
What a turnaround. Authored by, you know, the St. Ed's grad.
What was the kid's name who returned the kick?
Darrellus Clark.
Why didn't you say his name? Why didn't you say his name during the broadcast? You didn't know who it was, did you?
Because we filmed the open live. I don't have a spotter. The booth is too small.
You didn't know who the hell it was?
So I'm looking away from the field as the ball is in the air. And nobody's telling me in my ear who has the football. And I can't see his number because he's sprinting down the field very fast, and my hands are up in the air, and I'm looking around. Who has the football? Because they didn't tell me,
Scott.
They didn't know who was going to be on return.
Zach.
Wait,
sorry.
That's your fault, Lima. Because if you go back to the Merrimack game, you know DeRealis question.
Yeah, but they didn't use him every time in kick return. They've been platooning the position, and he has two touchdowns.
Zach, I don't know if your phone did it. I had probably me more than you, since I work with him every day. I had at least 20 texts, inboxes, whatever, going, hey, there's a bunch of people on the internet like, why did he say his name? Why did he say his name? Why did he say his name? I knew why he didn't say his name. It's like, he didn't know who was returning.
The beauty is, if I could just also help people understand, when you see like Herbie and Fowler, if you notice, there are times where they will show them.
Well, the dog points it out for Herbie.
They will show him in game, and there's 30 people in the booth. And all of them get spotters. The dog has a spotter as well.
They can't even get you a dog in there, let alone a person.
A dog.
They got 30 people in the booth. You got 30 people in the whole stadium. Right, I get it.
You should have some guy in 122 shot up. DeRealis Clark.
Yeah, that's who has it.
That's the guy.
That's who has it, announcer. I'll do your work for you.
I want to have DeRealis Clark on the podcast because, like, who else is named DeRealis Clark? But, like, I wasn't expecting to have to do it on October 20th. Just for time, right?
I know. I kind of like to see DeRealis Clark play some offense, a little more offense. They did have him throw a pass in that game.
I will be there on November 4th for Akron.
Oh, yes.
I am not, come hell or high water, I am not missing that game.
What day of the week is that?
It's a Tuesday night.
I won't be there. Sorry. Is that a Kent?
Might Dustin Fox be there?
Okay, no more. Don't tempt him.
I think it's at Akron this year, but I'm not sure at this current moment.
All right. Zach, thank you so much for the time, your candor, and all the laughs.
I can't wait till you guys call me back in many months. See ya.
Zach Jackson on the Fan Hotline.
Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
So you call your virtual insurance company to ask a simple question about your policy, but now you're on hold. Listening to this music while you wait and wait and wait. Auto Owners works with local independent agents who tailor coverage to meet your needs and pick up the phone when you call, because you shouldn't be on hold so long that you memorize the music. That's simple human sense. Ask your independent agent if Auto Owners makes sense for you.
Mint is still $15 a month for premium wireless. And if you haven't made the switch yet, here are 15 reasons why you should. One, it's $15 a month. Two, seriously, it's $15 a month. Three, no big contract. Four, I use it. Five, my mom uses it. Are you playing me off? That's what's happening, right? Okay, give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3-month plan. $15 per month equivalent required. New customer offer first 3 months only. Then full price plan options available. Taxes and fees extra. See mintmobile.com.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Skip the gym, not the workout. With Hydro, you get a full body workout in just 20 minutes, hitting 86% of your muscles in one smooth, low impact motion. And now there's a new Hydro Arc, Hydro's most advanced rower yet. Arc introduces Hydro Metrics, tracking your power, endurance, and precision every time you row, so you can actually see your progress. Go to Hydro.com and use code FIT to get $100 off any Hydro rower, including Arc. That's HYDROW.com, code FIT.
I'll now to go ahead and talk about Charles Robinson's quotes on the Cleveland Browns, the state of the Cleveland Browns. We head out to the Fan Hotline. A welcome on of Pro Football Talk, Miles Simmons, Cleveland Zone. What's up, Miles?
Hello, gentlemen. How are you?
Doing all right. It's getting interesting early here. It does feel like we're starting to get reports that maybe the thought partners aren't as aligned as previously thought after the Joe Flacco trade. Where do you think the pressure cooker is in Berea?
Well, I mean, it's already December in Berea, right? It's only October 16th, especially, you know, if these guys go out there and lose to the Miami Dolphins in, you know, potentially 45 to 60 mile an hour winds on Sunday. My gosh, if you can't beat Tua Tagovailoa in those conditions, then yeah, the conversations are going to get very loud very quickly. It is interesting because, I mean, I guess with my Cleveland colored glasses on, I was probably a little too optimistic about the way the Browns could play even early in the season. But, you know, what's interesting to me about that quote from Stefanski where he said he was surprised, you know, by the trade. I mean, in context, he was talking about the fact that the Bengals would call them in the first place was surprising. Right? And so maybe there's more to it than that. But I think, you know, reacting off of Mike Tomlin saying Andrew Berry, you know, in his press conference is smarter than me or than I, like, there's now just weird stuff that is going on with the Browns that, you know, in some ways is more external than internal, but you can't tell me that there's not some sort of internal turmoil when you are 1-5 a year after going 3-14. Like, that's, you're setting, there is no world where teams go this poorly for this long. And even if Kevin Stefanski is a two-time head coach of the year, like, there have to be significant changes because this team is not competitive.
Are they a package deal, Stefanski and Berry, or do you feel like there is an opportunity where Stefanski would end up fired and Berry would keep his job, or vice versa?
I mean, you can't put anything past Jimmy Haslam, but I would say that it's best to clean house. I mean, I always think it's best when you have a GM and a head coach who are totally aligned. And sometimes that comes from it comes from the GM picking the coach. But, you know, I mean, there are other situations where if you get an experienced head coach, like, for instance, a Mike Vrabel, like, is a guy that you would probably let pick his own GM. And I guess it could be a sore subject for some people that I'm bringing up Mike Vrabel's name.
Yeah, thanks for that, Miles.
Like, I mean, I don't know. I cover the league nationally, okay? What am I supposed to do? but it's that I think is part of it. You know, who are you getting in to be the next head coach? You know, if there is a next head coach of Cleveland Browns next year, and what does that mean from a GM standpoint? I don't know. It's a little early to handicap it.
All right, Miles, we talked about this a little bit earlier. If we start to build a blame chart, or let's say a blame pie graph for why this thing is where it is, how much goes to Jimmy Haslam? How much goes to Paul DePodesta? How much goes to Andrew Berry? And how much goes to Kevin Stefanski?
You know, what does Paul DePodesta do? Does he live in, like, out here with me in Southern California?
Yep. San Diego,
I don't really
yeah.
understood what Paul DePodesta does.
San Diego.
Yeah, in San Diego. Yeah, so I said Southern California. You know, it's
Wales.
San Diego basically could be a different state. Yes, exactly. I don't know how much to blame Paul DePodesta. I mean, like, 100% of it goes to Jimmy Haslam because he's the one hiring these people, right? So, you know, and like, from all the different folks that Jimmy Haslam has hired since he was approved as owner back in 2012, back when I was interning at 92.3 The Fan. It's, you know, you have like this now weird situation where, okay, he's hired these different people. Stefanski and Berry have far and away, unfortunately, been the most successful out of them. But when you go 3-14 last year and you're 1-5, you're kind of like, has it not run its course? I mean, I think that I don't know that there's real reason to fire Berry and Stefanski if on Monday, say, if they go out and lose to the Dolphins on Sunday. I don't. Well, because what does that do? But, you know, in January, if this team ends up, you know, with a similar record to what it does last year, I don't know what the argument is for keeping them around because they're not getting better. So this is not a league where it's like, oh, yeah, five-year plan. And even if you did have a five-year plan, these guys are year six. So it's just kind of like, all right, this may have run its course at this point, unfortunately, if things continue the way that they've gone.
Have you been impressed with Dylan Gabriel through two games?
No. Should I
just had to ask it that way because we've had guests on that say they're impressed with Dylan Gabriel. And so we both are not impressed with Dylan Gabriel. But I don't want to assume that you're not, because I've done that a couple times already this week. And then I've gotten some curveballs.
I mean, I don't think Dylan Gabriel's a terrible quarterback, but I mean, it's hard to be impressed with, like, damn, he did score 20 points. Like, what's there to be impressed with offensively right now? I mean, Quinshon Judkins looks like he could be a dude, but that's nice. I mean, he would be probably better off with a team that had a functional offensive line. And, you know, this is, the Browns don't, I mean, for various reasons. So, yeah, I mean, I don't think Dylan Gabriel's been horrible, but to say I've been impressed, but no, but there's nothing impressive about that offense in general right now.
All right, Miles. Bengals Steelers tonight on Thursday Night Football, little AFC North action. Mm-hmm. If the Steelers win tonight, are we calling the AFC North settled for Pittsburgh?
Yes, absolutely. Man, who's going to challenge them? I mean, Joe Flacco might be able to do some fun things with Ja'Marr Chase and T. Higgins over the course of however many weeks he's going to be playing there. And look, I don't think that there's a firm guarantee that even if Joe Burrow is healthy to come back in December, like, why would you put Joe Burrow out there on a surgically repaired foot if the Bengals have like 3 wins in December, which is something that could certainly be the case. I mean, Joe Flacco has a decent arm still, right? I mean, we watched it, but he can't move. He's a statue. And with the way that offensive line is constructed down in Cincinnati and the way that their pass protection has worked historically under Zach Taylor, like, I don't see how you're going to have a Joe Flacco that doesn't throw a bunch of interceptions. Like, that's what he does at this point. So, yeah. And the Ravens, I mean, even if Lamar Jackson comes back and he's doing MVP type things, that defense is just an absolute mess. So I don't know what they're going to be able to do down in Baltimore when you already have 5 losses on the season, right? I mean, that's not something that you can easily come back from. I don't know, man. I don't even know how good the Pittsburgh Steelers really are, but yes, they could absolutely have this thing wrapped up effectively tonight if you go and you take it to the Bengals and you give them 5 losses and you start out 5-1. I mean, it becomes their division that they're really going to have to fall on their face in order to lose.
Miles, we got to run, buddy, but we appreciate you. Thank you so much.
All right, take care, gentlemen.
Miles Simmons there, Cleveland Zone, of course, Pro Football Talk, NFL writer on the Fan Hotline. React to what he had to say about Dylan Gabriel and many other things in 5 minutes on 92.3 The Fan.
Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
Honeymoon, here we come. Where's our car?
It's been stolen.
Well, call our insurance agent. I'm right here.
Oh, hey, Jen. You got our invite.
Love the dress.
Are we covered for this?
Of course. That's why you chose Auto Owners. We work together to get the right coverage. So when the unexpected happens, you know you're covered.
That's simple human sense.
Now, how do we get to the airport?
Take mine.
Thanks, Jen.
Ask your independent agent if Auto Owners make sense for you.
Hey, Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. Now, I don't know if you've heard, but Mint's premium wireless is $15 a month. But I'd like to offer one other perk. We have no stores. That means no small talk.
Crazy weather we're having.
No, it's not. It's just weather. It is an introvert's dream. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3-month plan. $15 per month equivalent required. New customer offer first 3 months only. Then full price plan options available. Taxes and fees extra. See mintmobile.com.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5.
I know where I'm going to bet from now on.
Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Skip the gym, not the workout. With Hydro, you get a full body workout in just 20 minutes, hitting 86% of your muscles in one smooth, low-impact motion. And now there's a new Hydro Arc, Hydro's most advanced rower yet. Arc introduces Hydro Metrics, tracking your power, endurance, and precision every time you row, so you can actually see your progress. Go to Hydro.com and use code FIT to get $100 off any Hydro rower, including Arc. That's HYDROW.com, code FIT.
I want to run some questions by John Greco. He joins us, former Browns offensive lineman, current analyst. He's on the fan hotline. Hello, John.
Hey, Ken. Hey, Danny. Hey, Owen. How is everyone?
Oh, God. You already sound like you are not enthused to do this.
He sounds defeated. John, are you okay?
I'm doing well, yes.
Danny Cunningham in for Tone today. Are you sure you're doing well? Are we ready to go over this?
Absolutely.
All right. So your thoughts on the loss. What was the biggest problem on the loss on Sunday to Pittsburgh before we look into the future here?
Oh, God. I mean, I have a long list of things that kind of bother me, but I have to say that the huge number of pass attempts really bothered me. And, you know, there's so many different ways to dissect why they might have done it, why it was the best option at the time, why they couldn't run the ball. But, you know, your best offensive player right now is a running back. And you pass the ball that many times with your, third and fourth string tackles right now,
mm-hmm.
and there's more injuries. And, you know, Dylan Gabriel had 2.5 seconds to throw the ball on 80% of those throws, I would have to guess. Why not hand the ball off a few times? Now, I know that there's loaded boxes. I've said that on your show before, that that's all the Browns are going to see, because if you take away their main threat, you know, sure, pass the ball against us 60 times. I'd sign up for that if I was a defender or a defensive coach going against the Browns. But at least if you're handing the ball off, you have one of your best playmakers, probably your best playmaker on offense, with the ability to try to make somebody miss in the hole or break a tackle and spring a big play. That's really their only way to manufacture big plays right now, assuming nobody holds and there's no penalty. So, you know, how many of those attempts were 10 yards or more down the field? It didn't seem like many. And if they are, they're typically at the end of the half when, you know, the team's defense is playing soft or in mop-up duty. But, you know, I'm sick of seeing passes hit guys in the helmet and they act like they just landed on planet Earth, like they weren't expecting the ball. And maybe they weren't. But, my God, they better be ready, because there's not a lot of time to throw. So you can't assume anything that you can get your normal depth on these routes. You have to be expecting the ball at all times. Or the ball's dropped, or the ball's thrown over your head or underthrown. There's just so much going on. And then maybe when everything is good and somebody's running free on a route, you know, the quarterback's getting hit or hurried or rushed or sacked. So it's just such a symphony of mistakes and errors offensively right now that I don't even know how to pinpoint it, where to tell you that they lost. Special teams continues to, you know, show up in areas where it's just like, my God, what are they doing? And then defensively with the big plays, and I knew there was a new guy there and at corner after the Greg Newsome trade, but you know those guys can't hold off forever. And I you know, we talked about it the last 2 weeks. You know, yeah. Hey, guess what? Teams are going to start putting 2, 3, 4 guys on Myles Garrett and playing one on one everywhere else and try to make plays. But you know, those guys, frankly, are probably tired of it, and they realize that they have to hold teams to 7 points. Or 10 points to try to win the game. So you can see frustrations are starting to mount, and rightfully so.
I love that you call this a symphony of errors. I can't think of a better way to describe it, but I am curious from your perspective, what about that symphony of errors is fixable? Like, what do you look at if you are part of this team or if you're part of this coaching staff and say, we have to start here. This is what can realistically get better now.
Well, you're not going to like this answer. I don't know if you can, because, you know, you just heard me rattle off. You just heard me rattle off a lot of the things that contribute to it. And, you know, okay, Kevin Stefanski can come in this week and say, hey, look, we're handing the ball to our running back and let them try to stop us. Well, you know, that gets everybody amped up. Like, that used to get me amped up in the offensive line room. I'd be like, okay, let's be road graders. Let's get this guy loose and see what can happen. But, you know, I'll go back to defenders are just more and more defenders are going to start creeping in the box, lurking in the box, because they don't have a pass game to respect. And if they do, you know, a defense could say, hey, we're willing to let a guy, you know, throw one over our head and maybe we draw a pass interference or get a big chunk play. But, hey, let's just go play defense in the red zone. And hey, if we make a mistake and let up one big play, you know, the Browns can't score more than 17 points. So let's just take some risks over here and stop the run, make them completely one-dimensional. But to try to find an answer to your question, I think it's, you know, Coach Stefanski is going to come out and say, oh, we got to execute better. We got to do this better. Everyone's going to win their one-on-one job. And he's right, and that has to, you know, come true. But I just don't know how you can expect, you know, these guys that are playing a tackle right now, it's starting to wear on them. Obviously, the interior guys are more one-on-one because you have to slide guys certain ways to help one tackle, and then the other one tackle is exposed. You know, you're leaving tight ends in, all these things that I always come on and say on your show, and that just takes more and more threats out of the play. So when you have two man route combinations because everybody else is trying to pass protect, that's not easy. And then we're upset at Dylan Gabriel. Oh, just throw it. Well, the guy's thrown into double coverage, trying to, you know, throw a 90 mile an hour fastball into the tightest window, and you know, the passes are being deflected. And you know, this sounds so negative because it's frustrating. And that's what happens when you're one-dimensional or when you try to force things and you can't get it done or you make all those errors and it just seems like they mound up with penalties and a missed assignment here and there or the wrong route or a drop or a missed read or a missed throw or a missed block. There's just so much negativity going on right now offensively that I don't even know where you begin.
All right, John, I want to ask you something else here. Myles Garrett has shared his frustration. I'm sure you heard the postgame sound. I got a Mike Tomlin audio bit I want you to hear, so we got a lot of work to do here together. But your thoughts on Myles Garrett, what's his teammates think of him, you know, when he said, he was asked about, you know, playing with a lead, and he said must be nice. Here's Myles on the game after the game on Sunday after they lost to the Steelers and being asked about the defense playing with a lead.
When you watch their pass rushers able to get after it because they have a 2 or 3 score lead, what goes through your head?
Must be nice.
He's frustrated. And I think we're starting to see the cracks where, you know, Sunday, going into the game, Evan Washburn saying, oh, yeah, you know, talk to Jim Schwartz. This team's together. Uh-huh. And now after the game, I don't know if it's going to go that way. I mean, every man reaches his breaking point. However, you know, Myles has been called into question for his effort on Sunday's game. Where do you lie on any of that?
You know, I'm not going to question his effort. I know his production wasn't there, and I'm not making excuses for him. But like I just said in the previous comments, you know, he's got 2, 3, 4 different sets of guys blocking him and hitting him on every play. And rightfully so. They should be doing that. And he's just going to have to get used to that. And when your offense can't score points and it is not explosive, you're going to be in tight games and you're not going to get a lot of, you know, late cleanup where you're against their third string tackle and pinning your ears back and going and crushing the quarterback. I've played on the wrong end of a lot of those situations. It is not fun. And you could tell the defensive line is laughing and yamming it up, and it sucks, let me tell you. So the best situation playing offensive line is when you're playing with a lead and those guys are frustrated because they're not getting their 2, 3, 4 big plays a game where they're getting sacks or quarterback hits. So, yeah, he has every right to be frustrated, and that's what he's going to do. The guy's a future Hall of Famer. Nobody's going to go up to him and say, hey, you know, don't say that to the media. It might send the wrong message. That's just not going to happen. He's going to do and say what he's feeling, and he's earned that right, frankly. you know, he signed a big contract to stay, and that's, you know, he made that bet. He's got to delay in it. So go ahead.
Well, at the same time, I'm not trying to be tough talking Ken here, John, but yeah. It's like, hey, man, like everybody's, oh, no, you signed your deal. He could have, if he really wanted to, he could have folded his arms and stomped his feet and probably got the same amount of money somewhere else, got a Micah Parsons deal somewhere else, and he could have moved on. He didn't. So when it comes to, you know, any belly aching about how things are going, it's like, hey, man, you had your chance to get out, and we could have got 2 first-round draft picks, so it wasn't like anybody was going to hate you over it, for crying out loud. Now that you've signed on, you're here forever. You can't poison the waters. I know you're frustrated, but, man, you signed on for a hell of a lot of money. You can't make it any worse.
Yeah, and I agree with you. And like I said, that's just what he's going to do. And really, what can anyone do about it? You know, he's going to make his comments to the team in the locker room, behind the scenes, and to the media. And that's just, everybody has to live with it. And is it the right way to do things? Maybe not. Is it, you know, but that's what he's doing. So that's sending a message. I don't know if it's going to rally the troops or continue to poison the waters. I like how you said that, but it's the fact of the matter is it is what it is. And he's going to continue to say that. And my God, if it looks even worse or if it looks like that against Miami, who is in total disarray, I hate to see what happens in the postgame comments this Sunday.
Let me ask you this. Sean Greco joining Danny Cunningham, Ken Carmen here. Danny's in for Tone this morning. I want to play the Mike Tomlin audio from yesterday here, and I need to look inside of what you think, because I have my opinion of what he was trying to say. Danny, I think, shares a lot of the same agreement, but I want to hear it from you. Here's Mike Tomlin yesterday talking about the Joe Flacco trade from the Browns to the Bengals.
You know, to be honest, it was shocking to me. Andrew Berry must be a lot smarter than me or us, because it doesn't make sense to me to trade a quarterback that you think enough of to make your opening day starter to a division opponent that's hurting in that area. But that's just my personal feelings.
That probably is his personal feelings. However, do you think he's trying to stick up for Kevin in a way?
I don't know if I see it that way. I guess I've never thought of it like that. I think it's more of a kind of a troll job, and he's, you know, kind of kicking us while we're down and taking a shot at Andrew Berry. I think he obviously respects the hell out of Joe Flacco and his resume, and playing against him in the playoffs throughout his career. I don't know. I don't know if I'm reading between the lines that much and that he's that cryptic with the defense of Kevin Stefanski. He might be doing that. That's not how I took that. But the comments were interesting. And, you know, Coach Stefanski, I did hear his response and kind of his remarks, which is, you know, totally calculated and obviously what I would expect Kevin Stefanski's response to be. But Mike Tomlin, they just won the game. That was his response. He's taking a little shot. He's having some fun. He's being sarcastic. That was more kind of what I took from it.
I looked at it too as he's annoyed that he has to play Joe Flacco and not Jake Browning this week. Like that, I think, is part of it, is that the Browns made his life a little bit more difficult, even if the Browns can't actually make his life difficult when they play the Steelers, but they made it a little bit more difficult on a short week. And I do think that there is a respect for Kevin Stefanski that he has. And I kind of think he sees a lot of what's happening here with the tide is sort of shifted onto people are blaming Kevin in a way that they weren't before.
Yeah, you make a good point about the preparation for this week, how it's changed, and he would much rather not play against Joe Flacco. But I don't know. I guess I just wasn't reading into it that much as far as, like, the head coach and the two head coaches kind of watching out for each other cryptically. I just think it was more as a subtle shot to the front office and, hey, what are we doing? You know, like one of those kind of things. Do they have to try a little bit harder against Joe Flacco? Sure. But either way, you got to prepare, and they're not going to take anybody lightly. I just think it was more of a subtle shot.
Dolphins are slop. We're slop. 1-5, 1-5. If you lose this game, does Kevin risk losing the locker room?
I don't know. I don't know if losing the lock. I just think it would be so bad. The Browns are favored, okay. And it's funny. I heard Tua's comments and the head coach's comments about these player only meetings. And oh my God, I used to hate player only meetings. A guy's not showing up. Guy's showing late. and then they have to go out into the media and say those things. If you're a leader, you should call those guys out in the locker room, not through the media. So they are in shambles, but I feel like they still have playmakers. Their running back is a playmaker on offensively. That guy had an unbelievable game. Tua can still deliver it if he's, you know, standing upright and not running for his life. And their defense can get after the quarterback a little bit. So I think the Browns have to really focus on trying to do things the right way offensively. The defense could, you know, take care of itself, but limit the mistakes, the pre-snap penalties, the missed assignments. Try to be where you're supposed to be when you're supposed to be there. And that's the only thing that's going to get put them in the best chance to win. Because if they're going out there making mistakes, and one thing is they've been taking care of the football offensively. So continue to do that, and hopefully they come out on the right side of things, because I don't know if he'll, quote-unquote, lose the locker room, but it's going to get a lot uglier. You're going to have even more moans and groans into the media from Myles Garrett. Offensively, you're still going to hear the same things. We got to get back to work. We can't make mistakes. And people just have to get used to that. That's all that we're going to hear out of Coach Stefanski and the guys on offense. They're not going to give us anything. But yeah, it's going to be a tough sledding if they lose to Miami this weekend.
Okay, like 30 seconds. Why did you hate player-only meetings?
Because I just thought it showed – you didn't have a player-only meeting because things were rosy and going well and smelling great. It was because things were dire. And you use them to try to rally the troops. But I think, guys, because I was a part of so many of them, and you just kind of knew, like, hey, we're doing this because we have to, and it's important. I'm not downplaying them. But I just think I hated them because I was a part of so many, and you have them because of the current state of the room or the building or the situation. And generally, it's not good when you're having them. So I think it just brings back bad memories for me. But when you're starting to call guys out from not showing up or being late, I mean, that's ugly.
The great John Greco on the Fan Hotline. Find him on Twitter at John_Greco77. John, thank you for the time.
Guys, have a great week.
We are going to be joined here in a second by the man who was the offensive coordinator for the Rams' greatest show on turf. And that franchise won a Super Bowl. Oh, man, they were so good. So much fun to watch. And Mike Martz has joined us plenty of times before. And guess what? He's got a new book coming up, Third and Long. And right now, he is on the Fan Hotline. Coach, how are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Hi, well, Coach.
Thanks for coming on. First, let me ask you about the book before we get into anything, because I know you're going to give us great stuff when we start talking about the Browns quarterback situation. What's up with your book? How do we get it? And what's the story there?
Some people keep telling me my story is so different, I should write a book. And I said, oh, that's garbage. I'm no different than anybody else. And so I got a guy that I know real well that writes. And so we sat down and started doing this together. And it's, you know, when you do a biography, it ends up being glorifying your life. And that's not what I wanted to do. So a lot of bumps and bruises. My way through the NFL and to it, there was no shortcut, that's for sure. So it's kind of fun to tell a story.
How do you do that? I mean, how many hours do you sit down before you can actually crank out a book?
Yeah.
It seems, especially, let's be honest. I mean, we talk about football and you have great football stuff, but deep down, you come off as a super humble guy.
Well, thank you. I just, the biggest issue would be he asks the questions. We sit down and he'll record our conversations. Then we meet once a week for about 5 hours. And then he'll go back and transcribe it. And we're going chapter to chapter. Then he'll give it back to me. And I'll remember something or scratch something out. He'll go back and figure. We'll go back and forth. And we've probably got 15 to 17 chapters done now. We're about halfway through, probably, or a little bit more. And I didn't want it to be sanitized. I want to be brutal about it, but also there are some things that you have to protect that are, you know, sensitive relationships with people and all that kind of stuff, some things that happen. But I just want people to get a sense of, there was no shortcuts, working for free and being out of work and food stamps and, all that kind of stuff.
Wow.
Mike, when's the book coming out?
Hopefully it's going to get out here this spring. Okay. We'd like to have it done here by the first of the year, and then get the right publisher and all that sort of thing. But Jim Thomas, who was the beat writer here for many years, he's a very good friend, and we became close friends. And he's the one who kind of pestered me about it. So I said, well, you know, I'm not doing anything now. Let's go ahead and do this and just see how it ends up. And I did not want to write this in the first person, but he convinced me that's the way it has to be. So, you know, it seems like it's going all right, but we'll see.
Awesome.
Well,
good luck with that.
I can't wait to see it.
Can't wait to read it.
Well, yeah, thank you.
It'll be great. So help us. Over the course of two seasons, we have a football team here who hasn't scored more than 17 points in 11 straight games. What do you do?
I think, you know, the quarterback position has always held that team hostage forever. It's just the way that's been, you know. I talk about the Bears finally getting it right with Williams and all that stuff, and they did. But they were in the same path. Even when I was there, you know, God bless him, he was a good quarterback, but he ultimately wasn't as good as quarterback as that organization needs. And I think they're in the same situation. You know, until they get it right at quarterback, until they find that guy, get him in there, I don't know if it's ever going to change much.
With the low output on offense, we're kind of wondering, all right, what can Kevin do? I know in the past you've told us that you like what he does on offense. He has everybody puzzled in town. They had a first and goal at the 3, and they didn't run the ball at all with Quinshon Judkins. Instead, you had a rookie quarterback out there, and you threw it there. You threw it 52 times. Is Kevin trying too much, Mike, to make this work? Is he trying to be creative? I would think he's in a tough spot, but I'm wondering, is he in such a tough spot he's overthinking this thing?
I don't think so. I think when you make those kinds of calls, first of all, you felt like they should run. Obviously, defense felt that way too. And I felt like when you do those things, when you make those calls, there's a message you're sending your team and the quarterback that you've got faith in him. And if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. But you got to do that. I mean, I've done that. And when it fails, it's awful. When it's successful, it's a good call because sure. He's trying to get this guy involved and build his confidence and whatnot. And, you know, I'm doing a speaking engagement here tomorrow morning and about fear of failure. And one of the things that happened when I was at the Redskins, we're 0-7. Gus Frotz, our quarterback, Hostetler's a backup, and we got Trent Green's the third quarterback. Norv and I felt he was the best. We're 0-7. We benched those guys. We go with Trent. We went 6 out of the last 9, and the 3 we lost were at the last minute. And the rest is kind of history, and it turned the whole dynamic of that team. All of a sudden, we looked like a team that wasn't any good to a real good team, and they went on to go into the playoffs the next year, and they lost the last play against Tampa, actually, in the playoffs. But the point is, it's just that one guy. You know, the energy that he brings, his personality, the confidence that it exudes, it changes the staff as well, the coaching staff. It's the whole organization. It's when people say it's the most important position in football, it's an understatement. You know, it really is because when you get it right, there's nothing like it. You can build around it and you can have it for many years. And when you don't have it and you haven't had it, it's miserable.
When you see a rookie play quarterback, what do you watch? What are you looking for to know that they're getting better every week?
Yeah. I look how quick he gets the ball out and how decisive he is and how accurate he is. And if he's getting the ball out quick and he's accurate, that means he's spent a lot of time in his preparation and he has it. He gets it. This stuff with young players, sometimes it takes him 4 or 5 years. You know, Aaron Rodgers, you know, he sat for 3 years before he got his chance, but he prepared. And the whole time, you got to be preparing yourself and going through this stuff. We had quarterbacks in practice would stand 15 yards back behind the quarterback and drop when he drops and mimic, you know, everything, you know, and I didn't tell them to do that. It's just what they wanted to do. They're trying to get better. They're trying to get into that, you know, and preparation for quarterbacks isn't everything. It's all inclusive. I mean, I can't stress that enough. And if you're not sure, if you don't know exactly what's going on, if you don't know how to handle situations, balls, you're late with it, you're indecisive. And that's order number one. And that's why I look for young players to see how quick they are with it, how decisive they are with it. Now they protect the ball.
Mike, we have two rookie quarterbacks here. You know, when they started this thing, you had Kenny Pickett and Joe Flacco. Both have been traded. You have Dillon Gabriel, who's the first guy up. And you have Shedeur Sanders waiting. If you're Kevin Stefanski, if you're any NFL head coach, how do you juggle two rookie quarterbacks?
Well, you don't. You don't. You don't worry about number two. You know, if his time comes and something happens, then you get him ready to play. But you can't juggle two quarterbacks, period. You know, I don't care whether they're vets or rookies. You just can't do it. You prepare one, you're all in on that guy and get him ready to play. That's your decision. If you start juggling two guys, what does that do to the guy that you're trying to start? You know, that's a blow to – now he's looking over his shoulder. That's the last thing in the world you want a rookie quarterback to do is look over his shoulder. You know, when Kurt started his first game, you know, after Trent went down, the first regular season game was against Baltimore. And in 7-on-7, his first 11 passes were in the dirt. He didn't hit anybody. Marshall stops. Hey, coach, can we start the drill over? I said, sure. He said, look, here's the deal. In front of all the players, he said, you're a quarterback, whether we win or lose or you throw interceptions. It didn't make any difference. You're our guy. We know how good you can be. Just go play. We got your back. And it just lifted up. And the ball didn't touch the ground after that.
Wow.
And so you have to have – you got to be all in on your guy. You can't all of a sudden say, well, we think you're good, just start, but just in case we're going to get this guy ready. You can do that on the side, but don't make an issue with it.
Wait, what did you think of the fact that they traded within the division to send Joe Flacco to Cincinnati? There's a part of me that says, you know what, if the Browns weren't going to start him, they probably wanted to send him to a place where he could start. Unfortunately, Cincinnati, you know, we all heard what Mike Tomlin said yesterday. What did you think when they – When they went into this thing with two experienced quarterbacks, and now they have none, and then they trade Flacco to Cincinnati. What'd you think there?
I was a little surprised by it, unless they just felt like he just can't do it anymore. You know, then if you send it to division, if you're convinced he can't do it when you're playing, he's going to prove he can't do it. You know, so that's the only thing I could think of. They probably were spent on him. You know, just didn't feel like they felt like it was time to go on with the youngster and get him ready to play. It's the only reason I can think of. And I don't know if Joe's done or not. He may be, he may not be. I didn't see him play, so I really don't know. But I think at some point, you know, a guy that's 42 years old, you have to make a decision when you got a young guy that you've drafted, you know, this, you know, where they are. You got to go all in the young guy and just get him ready to play. And being in the same division or not, you know, you're just trying to help the guy because, you know, it's a loyalty issue. He's got, you know him well enough to certainly. There's an advantage for you, too, defensively.
Mike Martz joining us, former head coach of the Rams, longtime NFL offensive coordinator. Mike, I don't know if you've had a good look at Dillon Gabriel, either in the pros or in college. If you have your thoughts, either way, how do you coach up a quarterback who's not exactly a statue back there at 6'4", 6'5"? Instead, you have a shorter quarterback.
Well, I hadn't seen him play yet. I caught snippets of him, and I would never comment on that. I think you had to be very specific with young players about where the ball's got to go in each play, and you have to be very, very good with your game plan in terms of creating things for him so he doesn't have to decipher things, you know, go through a lot of mental gymnastics, so to speak, protect him with conservative protections, hard play actions, you know, et cetera, and give him the best opportunity for success. You know, early in the game, get him some throws right away where he's feeling pretty good about it, you know. I always felt that was really important with young quarterbacks to come out and get the ball in the flat or a slant or something where, you know, he gets the jitters out and he gets kind of into the game. And you can manage that pretty good. You have to be real careful with the protections. You can't necessarily go back and do all the things you'd like to do, but you got to do the things that you observed of him that he, you know, he can do and help you win.
Is there a challenge to having a quarterback who's under 6 foot? I mean, does it change the way you coach? And lefty, no. Too. I mean, there's another thing. Does that do you no. run different play? I mean, I'm just trying to think of, you know, is there a coaching philosophy there? Yeah.
No, I tell you, I know what you're getting at. Here's Drew Brees would be the first guy to come to mind.
Sure.
But here's the thing with that. There, quarterbacks naturally will feel rush lanes and get the ball there instead of trying to throw over defensive linemen. And most of them are just not conscious of it. That's what you call pocket movement. You know, when you have to throw the ball in timing where it's between pass rushers and not trying to just throw it right over their helmet. Now, sometimes it happens. And you either feel that or you don't feel that. I've seen guys that were 6'4", 6'5", continually get balls batted down. And yet, you look at Drew Brees, he never got balls batted down.
That's
because
true.
And Kurt was the same way. Kurt had this uncanny ability. He'd throw sidearm. Now, there's a slant he throws in the Super Bowl against Tennessee. When you look at the end zone copy, you can see him, his arm and his helmet. You can see the pass rusher. Torrey run the slant route, and the ball comes out almost 5 feet or 4 feet off the ground, sidearm between the rush lanes. And he doesn't even see the receiver. He knows where he's supposed to be. He just flicks it in there. And had he thrown it right over the defensive line, it clearly would have been batted down. And that's just something guys feel or they don't feel. And that's what's imperative about short guys, is they've got to be able to have that feeling of anticipation and getting balls naturally through rush lanes where you're not getting things batted down all the time. That's the only thing that you have to be concerned about short guys.
Coach, as always, we are smarter when we listen to you and what you have to say, and we always appreciate your time.
Look forward to the book.
Oh, thank you. Love talking to you guys. Good luck.
Obviously, we got a lot of Brown storylines. How hot is Kevin Stefanski's seat? Who's really behind the failure in Cleveland to this point? Is this all part of the plan? When does Shador start? All these things, plenty more, will be debated here with Ross Tucker. He's on the fan hotline right now. It's Odyssey, NFL Insider Ross Tucker. Insider calls brought to you by Nationwide. For your insurance and financial needs, Nationwide is on your side. Ross, welcome to the show. Hope you enjoyed that.
Yeah, what I like is the variety. I like the change up every week that I don't exactly know what's coming. I appreciate that because you have to remember what you did the week before and slightly alter it. That was a little bit different. I liked it.
I'm here to be thoughtful about you. I know you got the Steelers and Bengals radio call tomorrow night. So I did actually want to start this with the AFC North landscape. Ross, do you think the Bengals have a better chance to get right and challenge the Steelers for this division, or do you think it's the Ravens who've got the better chance?
Definitely, definitely Ravens. I don't think that the Bengals have much of a chance. I do think that they have a chance tomorrow night. I'm actually at the airport on my way to Cincinnati, so if you hear the crazy, annoying loudspeaker, that's why. But I thought it was funny. And maybe a little bit amusing that Mike Tomlin is so frustrated at Andrew Berry. I don't know why Mike Tomlin thinks that Andrew Berry should care about the Steelers and them trying to win games. Andrew Berry's trying to do what's best for the Browns, and what was best for the Browns he felt like was getting something, anything for Flacco at this point. Tomlin is maybe rightfully frustrated because Flacco gives them a better chance to win the game tomorrow night than Browning would. I mean, Flacco's not going to mess around. He throws it to Chase and Higgins, gives those guys a chance. So Tomlin, he's frustrated with Andrew Berry making his job more difficult, I guess. But ultimately, I still have a tough time seeing the Bengals being in that 9-11 win range that I think it's going to take. And I think that is exactly where the Ravens will end up. I know they're 1-5, but when they get Lamar back after the bye, I think they'll get a boost. I think they'll go for a run, and then the next thing you know, they'll finish somewhere between 9 and 11 wins, just like the Steelers. So I think it'll come down to the end, really, for those teams to see who ends up winning the division.
So I'm interested in your takeaway with Tomlin mentioning Andrew Berry, because it's just so out of character with Tomlin there. Some people are surmising that it was more about him sticking up for Kevin Stefanski. It felt like you're reading it more as he just doesn't want to play Joe Flacco.
That's correct. I don't know how he's sticking up for Kevin Stefanski when Kevin Stefanski benched Joe Flacco. You know, if Joe Flacco was the starting quarterback for the Browns, then I think that's a stronger argument. But Flacco's been benched, and I think he's just very frustrated that Flacco makes the Bengals more competitive, more formidable, and the Steelers have to play them twice. He's annoyed. He wanted to win those two games. He wants to get double-digit wins. He wants to win the division. And now he knows, short week, he's got to go against Flacco, who has made $200 million. He's 40 years old, and he doesn't care about anything. He'll just throw the ball up to Higgins and Chase, and he's going to give the Bengals a puncher's chance in any game they play. So I think Tomlin's very frustrated. I thought it was, like I said, amusing that he said that. But ultimately, the Browns are going to make every tiny move they can, no matter how small or big, to get better, in particular for next year.
With all this being said, obviously they're 1-5. We knew they had a tough six-game stretch to start the season. And yet they're way more undisciplined and maybe under-talented than we thought. It feels really bad here in Cleveland with boots on the ground. You're a little more removed, not having to live in it every single day. How bad do you think things really are for the Browns?
I don't think that bad. And listen, I'm not a Browns fan. I don't live in Cleveland. I don't watch every snap they take while it's happening live. I get all that. And if I were a Browns fan, I'd be super frustrated too. You know, but I mean, welcome to the club. What do you think Ravens fans are thinking right now? They're the Baltimore Ravens. They're like Super Bowl favorites. They're 1-5. The Miami Dolphins, you know, they thought they had playoff hopes. I mean, no offense to Browns fans listening, but out of the teams that are 1-5, you know, the Browns are pretty far down the list in terms of preseason expectations for what they would do this year. They probably could have, would have, should have won another game. You know, whether it was the Cincinnati game or the Minnesota game, but they also could have very easily lost the Green Bay game. I told you guys this week, I kind of feel like the Browns are about where I thought they'd be. Now, they have some real opportunity coming up this month. You got the Jets, you've got the Dolphins, you've got a bye. They could very easily win a couple games this month. I don't know if you guys want them to win those games or not, but they very easily could. I think what we know is that Dylan Gabriel looks like he belongs. I'm not sure that means as a long-term starting franchise quarterback in the NFL, but at least he looks like he belongs at a minimum to me. He looks like he could be a career backup that is a pretty solid player in that role. Maybe he'll be more than that. And then I still see, you know, Fannin catching balls and Schlesinger making a bunch of tackles. And, you know, I think if, you know, I think the thing that would make me the most concerning, perhaps if I'm a Browns fan, is that I don't know that the draft class for quarterbacks is as good as you thought it was going to be. You know, I mean, I think we all know that they, you know, kind of took a couple lottery tickets on Gabriel and Shador, and I suspect Shador will play at some point with the idea of having the extra first round pick to get the guy next year. The question, I guess, now is, I don't know, I'd be curious to hear who Browns fans want. Is like, who is that guy? Who is the guy that they want to be the guy right now that the Browns would take in the top 10 next year?
Oh, yeah. No, it's too hard to say right now because it's changed so much. Like, we do our quarterback Deadpool where we all drafted quarterbacks, and Dante Moore right now seems like he's the leader in the clubhouse for a lot of people. That was a waiver wire pickup in our quarterback Deadpool. Like, that wasn't because
don't forget Fernando Mendoza.
And Mendoza as well. But like, it's all changed so quick, you know, like the Klubnik, Nussmeier, Aller, those names that and Arch Manning, those names we initially talked about aren't the names that are being talked about right now, Ross, as you know.
Yeah, that would be disheartening. And I mean, that's the other thing. If you think about it, now you can almost compare those guys to Jackson Dart, who's done some really positive things. And so you had a guy that a lot of people thought was a second round pick. The Giants traded up to take him in the first round. And, you know, I don't think anybody thought the Browns should take him, you know, with the fifth overall pick or whatever they had, certainly not the second overall pick. And now Dart's looking like, you know, he's got something to him. I mean, I've been pretty impressed with him. Now, I don't think he has a great chance to make it through the year. I mean, he plays like a kamikaze. It's hilarious to watch. I love it. I love watching him, but I'd be surprised. I would call an upset this at this point that Dart plays in every game this year. I mean, did you guys see last Thursday night?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Where he's about to go out of bounds, and instead he launches his head like a missile at Jihad Campbell, the Eagles linebacker. Like, he's an idiot. I love idiots like that for a while, but he's an idiot.
They found a quarterback that has the same mentality as their running back, and both guys are going to have a lot of fun, but it might only last about 5 years. Odyssey NFL Insider Ross Tucker on the Fan Hotline here. Insider calls brought to you by Nationwide for your insurance and financial needs. Nationwide is on your side. Sorry, I bailed on that. Nationwide is on your side. I tried, Ross. I couldn't do it. When should Shador start?
That's really hard to say, you know, not being there, because I really don't know what progress he's made from, you know, earlier in the season to now. I don't know. I want to see Gabriel for a while more, I think. You know, I mean, watching his first two starts, I don't think he's the reason why they lost those games. Now, is he a guy that's going to put the team on his back and take him to wins already as a rookie? No, but I don't know. He looks more comfortable than Cam Ward. And I know what everybody says, oh, you know, he played 6 years in college. He's 24 years old, blah, 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 blah. Well, guess what? How long do you think Cam Ward was in college? Cam Ward was at Incarnate Word for 2 years, Washington State for 2 years, Miami for a year. I mean, Cam Ward played college football forever, too. So I would say that I'm, you know, at least in terms of looking like they belong, Dylan Gabriel's not capable of making a couple of the wow plays that Cam Ward makes as the clear-cut number one overall pick. But overall, I would argue Dylan Gabriel's given the Browns a better chance to win a lot of these games than Cam Ward's given the Titans with the mistakes. I mean, Cam Ward, like, fumbles two or three times a game and throws a bad pick. And, he, you know, he does not look like he's nearly as comfortable as Gabriel. So I definitely want to give Gabriel at least this month, at least these three games against the Dolphins, the Patriots, and the Jets, including the bye. Let's see where they are after that. Let's see where he is after that.
Between Mike McDaniel and Kevin Stefanski this weekend, which coach needs to win more?
Mike McDaniel. Yeah, I mean, I still think it would be an upset if Mike McDaniel's back with the Dolphins next year, because this is a 1-5 team that has all kinds of, listen, people talk, okay? I knew for the last couple of years that the guys kind of were doing what they wanted to do there, you know, not showing up for meetings, late to practice, things like that. You know, then it came out this offseason, he tried to crack down and be more disciplined. You can't do that. You can't put the toothpaste back in the tube. And then Tua says this week that players aren't even coming to his, you know, player-led meetings, which, by the way, why would you say that publicly? You're basically calling yourself out and saying that the guys don't respect you enough to come to the meetings that you're calling. That was like a ultimate self-own by Tua. I didn't understand that at all. But the Dolphins, they've spent way too much money. They have way too much invested to be as bad as they are. I mean, they have a $50 million quarterback. You know, the Browns, I guess, technically do, but I don't even know where he lives, and Deshaun Watson, or where he's rehabbing. But the point is the Dolphins, if they don't get things turned around significantly, McDaniel's gone. I still would guess that Stefanski's back next year, but I do think how the rest of the season goes matters. You know, if I've learned anything from my time in the NFL, it's two things. How you finish makes a big difference because it's the last thing that the owner sees, and also fan sentiment. You know, it sounds like you guys or a lot of people in Cleveland are turning on him. I don't agree, but I'm not the one that comes up with that. You know, you guys know I live in central Pennsylvania. I mean, I feel like some of these Penn State fans forget what it was like before Franklin. You know, it was a lot of seven, eight win seasons for a while there. They had the whole scandal. Since Franklin's been there, they've clearly been a top 10 program. I mean, like the last 10 years, by any metric, any measure, they've been top 10. Now, they haven't been top five. They haven't been Georgia or Alabama or Ohio State or Clemson, and he hasn't been able to beat Ohio State. We all know that, but that might be a careful what you wish for situation there, because, you know, they won 13 games last year, double-digit games the last 3 years, and now because they lose a couple games in a row, you fire them? I mean, is it more likely for Penn State that they take the next step with the next coach and they're a top-five team, like the teams I just mentioned, or that they take a step back? It's probably more likely they take a step back. So for Browns fans, if you really want Kevin out, hey, you know, keep saying that and maybe it'll happen. My guess is the coach that you would get instead of him is not as good as he is, and that Stefanski would have success somewhere else. And I do believe he would get hired somewhere else. And then you guys would have another one of these situations like Baker Mayfield or Belichick or whatever, where someone has more success when they leave Cleveland after Cleveland gives up on them.
Ross, given what you just said there, I don't think Kevin's a bad coach. I do think he's a bit overrated. He's, you know, it's 4-19 the last 23 games. Mm-hmm. The overall record is now well below. He's at 456 winning percentage. He's had two playoff appearances and going on 6 years and one playoff win. How hard is it to upgrade over a good coach and what I think not a great coach?
Well, I think it's fair to have a conversation about whether or not he's overrated. I do think that you can look at it and say, yes, he was coach of the year twice. But then the flip side is, you know, there were plenty of years where the Steelers were still having winning seasons with Duck Hodges and Kenny Pickett. So I can see someone making an argument that, yes, Stefanski's had some really good years and maybe some surprise years, and they won a road playoff game and all those things, but that he should have been able to find a way to win more games last year and this year. And I think that's a fair argument, and we can have that argument. And I guess if the question is, hey, if they're only winning three or four games anyway, how much worse could the next coach be? I think that's fair, too. I guess the question that Jimmy Haslam would have to ask himself is, with all these young players and with getting a new quarterback potentially this offseason, would you rather have Stefanski be the guy to try to turn this thing around and work with the new quarterback, or would you rather have somebody else? And I think you could fairly make arguments either way. And I do think that fan sentiment matters. I do think, you know, like I can just tell you, I didn't have a TV game this past weekend. I had Commanders Bears Monday night on radio. So I never get to tailgate. I never get to be a dad. But I took my family to a Penn State, Wisconsin volleyball Friday night because my daughters like volleyball. Then we went to the football game. And it was ugly. You know, and I know it was only their third loss, but it was ugly. Like, people were really booing. They were, you know, like the students, everybody had just totally turned on Franklin. And I think that that really matters when you're the athletic director. You know, in college football, it's about the big donors. It's about the students. It's about the fans, the whole deal. And I think in the NFL, I think the fans do have a lot to say. Like, if these fans stop going to games and just say they're totally out on Stefanski, then I think that's something Haslam will have to strongly consider. I personally don't recommend that. I personally think he's a good football coach, and I think lessons can be learned from, like, the Steelers. I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think Cowher might have had back-to-back losing seasons, and all of a sudden they turned it around. They went to the Super Bowl, and they got Big Ben, and, you know, they were number one seed, and next year they won the Super Bowl. But most owners don't have the stomach to just eat it and take the criticism like the Rooneys do. So Haslam, a former minority owner of the Steelers, has to decide whether or not he's willing to take the fan outrage or apathy. I think he's actually probably more willing to take the outrage than the apathy, which is usually the case with owners.
Ross, great stuff as always, buddy. Appreciate you. We'll talk to you next week, and enjoy the call for Bengals Steelers coming up tomorrow.
All right, everybody listening, Nick, who are they rooting for, or who are they rooting against?
You got to root against the Steelers, right?
I mean, I don't know. I'm asking you guys. I don't know if you hate the other team in the state more, or you hate the
Always hate the Steelers more, but I am interested to see if it continues to go bad for the Bengals if they sell off Hendrickson. I'm interested in that storyline.
Oh, no, I would be stunned if they don't. I mean, nobody likes saving money more than them. If they lose a few more, I would think that they would trade him. I'd be surprised if they didn't. Although, you know, he's going to get a gigantic contract, so that would be a third-round compensatory pick. So you have to pony up something pretty good just to get him for the rest of this year. So that's the interesting aspect of it.
Ross, great stuff, buddy. Appreciate you.
Later, dude.
Later, dude.
Andrew's joining us right now on the fan hotline. Andrew, are you a pizza guy?
And Jeff, who doesn't like pizza?
Okay, that's what I figured, but, you know, you got to double check, right?
I mean,
some people don't.
You know, my stomach doesn't always enjoy pizza. I pick my spots.
How about a nice mayo pizza for you? Nice mayo pizza.
See, he went there.
No, my point being is that, like, pizza's not a weekly thing for me. I love pizza. So I'm like, if I'm going to have a good pizza, it's like, if I'm going to have pizza, it better be a good pizza, that kind of thing.
I would agree with you on that, and this one is, so that's good. Hey, we just had former offensive lineman in the NFL, Niners, Vikings, Cardinals, Alex Boone on the show. Mm-hmm. Boone is from Cleveland.
Yep.
And he said, wouldn't it be great to flip the script and run it 52 times and pass it 17 this week? And that's a way they might be able to get this offense back. I hated the balance. Yeah. What do you think about all that?
Yeah, I think everyone agrees that it wasn't right. Well, when you go back and watch the game again, so go back and watch the end of the second quarter. They go 2 minute. Obviously, they go shotgun. They march down the field, and they end up with a field goal there at the end of the half. So they found some success there moving the football. Then they open up the third quarter with a couple of runs, a couple of penalties, and then, you know, the Steelers, I think they just kind of realized they're not running the ball and they fell behind and we got to throw. And then it gets out of hand, understandably. So I get it. I get why. But still, when you look at the numbers at the end of the game, you go, that's not what it should be. Context matters, I think, and the score matters. But at the end, you know, that ratio is not what you want. When you look at the weather, though, this week, and you realize it could be pouring rain and bad wind, you got to run the ball. And the Dolphins can't stop the run. I mean, the Chargers were down to their fifth tackle. Bobby Hart played right tackle last week, and I think he just got there. Fifth tackle, third running back, and they ran for 140 yards. So you got to do that. Their run fits last week, I was talking to somebody with the Chargers, which is just awful. Now, they obviously go back to the lab and try to clean that up this week in Miami, but the formula is there to run the football. I mean, if you want to get Rocket Sanders up and active for the first time since week one, do that too. I don't care how many backs you dress, run the ball.
Agreed completely.
Andrew, give me your assessment.
Okay, great. Good to talk to you guys.
Hey, it was good.
See you
Peace
later.
Out. You going for a walk on the beach while you're talking to us or no?
No, I already did that this morning.
Oh, I didn't say. Did you post it already or no?
Do I have to like document every workout?
I don't know. That's your new thing now. No, I like these little, they're like, okay. Deep thoughts with Andrew Siciliano as you're walking along the beach, giving us football information.
I did one
yesterday.
No. I did one yesterday.
I missed it.
It was the historical context, but tonight. So like, look at the AFC North. We, you know, the Steelers obviously beat the Browns. The Bengals aren't any good. The Ravens are what they are. They have the same record as the Browns. They're on a bye. If the Steelers win tonight, and Mike Tomlin bad on the road on Thursday night, we know that. They're going to have a 3.5 game lead in the division heading into week 8, and no AFC North team since they redid the divisions in 2002, and the AFC North, as we know it, was born. No AFC North team has ever had a 3.5 game lead heading into week 8. So that's what's in front of the Steelers tonight in the icy hot bowl. So I did that one yesterday.
I don't think Mike's real happy about seeing Joe Flacco this week either, based on what he said last week. Or was that earlier this week? That's right.
It was earlier this week. I know the weeks all melt into one.
They're blending together. What do you think of that?
It kind of caught me off guard because you don't see shots fired like that. You just don't. Especially coach at GM, it made no sense. I think, you know, my gut reaction was, wow, he's really ticked off and he's got to prepare for Joe Flacco and not Jake Browning. Joe Flacco might be able to, you know, get some, you know, throw together a couple of touchdowns and keep the game interesting, whereas Jake Browning, he probably views as an easy target, a guy he could turn over a couple of times and they could win that game. That's how I read it. I think it was unnecessary, totally unnecessary. But, hey, whatever.
What do you think of Dillon Gabriel?
He threw the ball too many times last week, but, he's not afraid to throw to the middle of the field. I think he's got crazy good accuracy middle of the field. Would love to see some shots outside the numbers. Maybe his best play of the day was dropped by Harold Fannin. That play on the move where Harold on the sidelines got to look that ball into his hands. That has been a reoccurring theme. He's dropped a couple this year. He's also, you know, played some fantastic football and broken tackles and been tough in the middle of the field. So I don't want to, you know, pound at Harold Fannin. But Dillon has done what you asked him to do, which is play turnover-free football. Got to protect him a little bit more and got to be able to stretch the field.
This sounds silly, having the fact that you dropped him back 58 times. Should they turn him loose a little bit more?
Meaning?
Everything seemed really controlled rather than, hey, let's try and make some big plays here and make some things happen. And I know the line wasn't doing a great job, and I know the receivers weren't doing a great job. But I wonder if it felt a little too controlled.
So, you know, Nathan has brought up this point last week about how it seems like he's reading it short to long as opposed to long to short. And I think there's some shots there early. If you look
by design, you think on that, Andrew? Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, you would have to hope that it isn't by design. I mean, part of that could be, hey, I'm not going to turn the ball over. I need to make sure that I protect the football. Or maybe he's being coached to go short to long, but there are, which I'd be surprised, but there are some plays out there schemed up early that I think have been there for the taking. But to be fair, there have been plays schemed up there for the taking early with Joe Flacco as well. I mean, there are plays schemed up early that are almost there every week. Like, I mean, go back to the game in which Deshaun got hurt last year when he tore his Achilles. Jerry Jeudy is still running free on the first play from scrimmage. So, you know, there are plays there. Hopefully the line can protect and the quarterback can see him. But Dylan, look, if you tell me that Dylan Gabriel played Brian Flores and Mike Tomlin and didn't turn the ball over, I mean, any rookie quarterback, that is an accomplishment and a good one and something to build on.
Give me a wide receiver that we can count on this week. Give me one that you think might be able to have a good game this week.
I mean, the answer should be Jerry Jeudy. I could tell you that when the Browns last played the Dolphins, we remember week 17 a year ago, but now in retrospect, feel like similar conditions to what we may have Saturday. Jerry Jeudy had 12 receptions that day. 12 in the rain and the slop. Remember that game? Miles had 2 sacks on Tyler Huntley. Actually should have had 3. They say one was a run and they took it away and didn't give him a sack. But Jerry Jeudy had 12 receptions that day, a career high. Also, something I dug up last night while doing some Travis Hunter research. You know, Jerry Jeudy has the most snaps of any wide receiver in the NFL this year. He has the most drops as well. The drops are subjective, but nobody has taken more snaps at his position this year than Jerry Jeudy. For whatever that is worth, I'm not suggesting it's the reason he's dropping footballs, but he is out there. He's not coming off the field at a rate that no other wide receiver in the league has.
I think it would help Jerry if other guys stepped up. So let me throw some names at you. I would love to see more of all three of these guys, Isaiah Bond, mm-hmm. Jamari Thrash, and I threw out the name Malachi Corley the other day. You know, he's on the team. You could throw him the ball and see if you have anything there, Andrew. And I mentioned those guys because they're here.
Look, Malachi Corley was a guy that everyone loved coming out of school. Maybe not everyone loved coming out of school.
Went
to
Western Senior Kentucky. Bowl.
He had the Yak King IG handle and all that. The Jets traded up to get him just last year. We're talking 19 months ago, traded up to get him near the top of the third round. So he's talented. Obviously, it ended pretty quickly there. Change of administration. The GM who drafted him and the coach that drafted him no longer there, so the Browns have him. They worked him in a little bit in Minnesota, or rather against Minnesota in London. Sure, someone's got to step up. Isaiah Bond had that fourth down catch last week. You know, Isaiah Bond, they're targeting him over the middle. Would love to target him outside the numbers, as I said. You know, he's a race car. Let's get him on the track. Maybe the weather isn't the best to do that on Sunday this week. But let's get them on the track and see if we can open it up. You know, Miami still has speed on their side of the ball. We're talking about how bad their defense is, but they still have Devon Achane, and they still have Jaylen Waddle. And Darren Waller right now, guys, who is off the couch and out of the music studio. Darren Waller looks as good as any tight end of the AFC. He leads AFC tight ends with 4 touchdowns. He's only played 3 games. So... You know, they have weapons over there as well, and they do score points. As they give up a lot, but they score a lot too. So the Browns can't win this game with 13, I don't think. Maybe I'm wrong.
Can they get to 20?
I would love to get to 20. Hey, I don't believe in broadcaster jinxes, but I mistakenly said during the game in London when they got to 17 that, you know, forget about 20, maybe we get to 30 today. Alas, neither happened.
Oh, Andrew.
There's no such thing as the broadcaster jinx.
That is correct.
There isn't.
That is correct.
You know, Jeff was throwing a no-hitter one time, and I said it, and boom, next guy hit a home run.
Like, do you ever, like the guy on the mound can hear, let's say the windows are open, and Hammy might mention that someone's or Matt Underwood that no one's given up a hit. Do you think the pitcher didn't realize that all of a sudden with a quiet crowd, he could hear it?
And he thought, I have a going? Oh, my God. Oh,
wow, wait, I didn't realize that. Or you think the kicker is down there? He hasn't missed from this distance in 19 years. You think he didn't know that?
Kaboom.
But you mentioning it.
Maybe he didn't think about it. It is negative thought if you want to get into the psychology of sport, maybe. And in baseball, the odds are that you could hear the play-by-play announcer if you have the unbelievable tones of a Tom Hamilton.
Okay, and Tom Hamilton.
Which happens maybe once every 15 years.
We all agree.
Yeah.
But do you think that him or the broadcaster saying it carries more weight than the guy on his couch saying it, yelling, no. Hey, Junior, get downstairs. So-and-so's throwing a no-hitter.
It's just if you hear it psychologically, that's all. But you shouldn't be hearing the broadcaster anyway. So I agree. I'm with you on this. We're on the same page. It is possible. You just don't want negative thoughts. Give me the other one. Like, why don't you talk to a starter on the day that he's starting? Like, why are you not even supposed to say baseball. Hi? That's stupid.
That's baseball superstition.
Yeah. So what's it? That's the same thing.
Unless you're Kevin Millwood.
Well, part of it is Kevin allowing Millsy. Them to focus. It's not. It's like it's a jinx if you speak to them. It's hey, they're in their own head. They're going through their game plan. Let them do their thing. That's how I always learned it.
I don't know. I think it depends on the personality. Like Jeff and I both said, you take it. Like we both respected Kevin Millwood, who was a guy that was around a lot when we were there. Mm-hmm. And Kevin would like, you know, we'd see Kevin walking out on a day that you knew he was going to start, and you'd be sitting in the dugout, and all of a sudden, Kevin
he'd come
would,
up to you and
he'd
say
be like,
hello.
Hey, what's going on, guys? What are you guys doing?
Scary.
I think it just depends on the personality of the person. I don't know. Weird personalities.
Or maybe Kevin near the end of his career with the Tribe was like, I don't care anymore. We're good.
There you go.
It's possible.
I'm thinking the Browns win this game on Sunday.
I hope the Browns win this game on Sunday. I mean, if Miami's not that good, there's really no other way to say it. But they do score points, and that is what you can't just look at their record. Well, I mean, your record is what it says you are.
There you go.
Quote somebody. So you can't. At 1-5, look at anybody, even if they are 1-5, and go, oh yeah, this is a win. Their defense, not good. Like 30th, 31st, 32nd, some 29 in most major categories. Most importantly, total defense, like they're giving up 400 yards a game and on the ground. So that says this should be your opportunity to move, i.e. run the ball. But your defense has to do the job as well against a quarterback who's going to get it out quickly. And I know that's always the MO against the Browns, and Kevin reiterated that yesterday. But, you know, Mike McDaniel calls plays for a quarterback that can't get hit. Remember that. Tua can't get hit. And I'm not trying to be flippant here, but with his concussion history, he can't get hit.
Mm-hmm.
So everything is quick game. Quick, 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 quick. Rhythm out, ball out, 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 out. He's not taking seven-step drops, period. That ain't going to happen. So, you know, hopefully the Browns get to Tua and they can bring him down a couple of times. But if this is one of those, oh, we only sack him once game, and then last week, obviously, you're not getting to the quarterback, although there are a couple of plays where Rodgers clearly got antsy and got the ball out because the Browns did get quick pressure, clearly, and many of those were incompletions. But if the sack numbers aren't there this week against Tua, it's because he gets the ball out as quick as humanly possible because that's how he's coached. They had a trick play last – no, they had a play last week where Achan was early in the game. He was running right. He reversed field and came all the way back to the left and maybe got back to the line of scrimmage. But, you know, when Tua sees him reverse field, he starts moving with Achan to get out in front, and then you see him just kind of like go, nope, I can't do this. I can't do this. And got out of the way. He's not throwing a block. He can't get hit.
Look forward to your call on Sunday. Thanks, buddy.
Likewise, guys.
So, got one for you, boss.
Oh, yeah?
What's black, white, and dented all over?
I give up.
The company truck. I know, but thanks to our agent, we've already submitted an insurance claim and can track the status right from the app. Auto Owners pays what they owe without any hassle.
Lucky for you, that's simple human sense.
Ask your independent agent if Auto Owners makes sense for you.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
T-Mobile is more than the best network in the game. They're now the best network in America, according to the experts at Ookla Speed Test. So MLB fans are connected from home to home plate. With the most advanced 5G, the most towers, and a signal that goes farther than ever, you can keep up with your teams on the road, overseas, and even off the grid. For baseball fans, it's better over here.
Based on analysis by Ookla Speed Test Intelligence data, 1H2025 compatible device and plan required for T-Satellite. See details at T-Mobile.com.
To remind you that 60% of sales on Amazon come from independent sellers, here's John from Devil Dog Pet Company.
We run our family business from Sterling Heights, Michigan, but we can reach customers all over the country thanks to Amazon. Good boy.
Shop small business on Amazon.
Whatever happens today, plan to conquer it with a fresh cup of True Brew Coffee. True North Convenience Store's True Brew Coffee is a hot, flavorful gourmet blend created from coffee beans from around the world. Our brew is truly perfect for any time of the day. During October and November, enter for a chance to win free coffee for a year. Check the True Rewards app for details or find the mobile app in your favorite app store. Offer valid 10/7 through 12/1. True Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.